Welcome to the Life of Finastra podcast. This particular episode of the podcast is a special one, as we're speaking with Giselle Mota, who is the Chief of Product Inclusion at ADP and is the creator of Nifty Collective, which focuses on bringing disability to the Web 3XR metaverse. Giselle's list of accomplishments don't stop there. We get into them a little bit more in this installment of the podcast. Sarita Donaldson, our Head of Diversity, Equity and Inclusion, took the reins for this episode, and I can't wait for you all to hear it.
Thank all of you for joining the Life at Finastra podcast. My name is Sarita Donaldson, and I am the Head of Diversity, Equity and Inclusion at Finastra. Today we have Giselle Mota, an inclusive futurist and an innovative thought leader leading the way in enabling inclusion in emerging technologies and product design. And Giselle, before we kick off, I just want to give the people some of your receipts, right? Just let them know who you are.
Receipts, okay.
So, top 100 in HR and future of work thought leader, creator of Nifty Collective, which focuses on bringing disability inclusion into Web3, XR, and Metaverse. You're also the founder of VIRST, an inclusive innovation and strategic ventures group. And for all the academics out there, visiting instructor at UFM on inclusive people analytics and AI, as well as guest lecturer at MIT, Purdue, AI School Paris, University of Washington, and worked with organizations like NASA and PwC, and graced the stages, I'll say, and pages, so stages of TED Talk, but pages of media outlets like Forbes and Vogue, and the list goes on. And not even to mention your current role as Chief of Product Inclusion at ADP, where you're building and leading the practice of inclusion and equity throughout 200 plus product portfolio. Giselle, what can I say? Amazing. Wow.
Thank you. By the way, I do sleep. If that sounded like if I'm always it doing stuff, no, I believe in the ministry of rest. So I definitely have moments of doing nothing. So.
Okay. Well, I have to step my game up because I don't know how you're fitting all of that into the 24 hour period and getting sleep. But so nice to meet you. So nice to have you here with us today.
Likewise, Sarita. Thank you for having me. I feel like we're about to have a really fun conversation.
Absolutely. Two of us together. Let's see what we can make of it.
That's right.
So I do want to say I have been super excited to have this conversation since we met a few weeks ago. And I'll say partly because of who you are as an amazing woman and the things that you've accomplished, right? A woman of color in the technology space, whether people are looking at that from you climbing the corporate ladder or even the work that you've done as a founder and futurist. But secondly, I just feel like you've been living and breathing the work and being in, I'll say, the eye of this technology storm that many of us, including myself, has really just been exposed to, right? I think over the last 6 months, really truly understanding the potential of Gen AI and the future of AGI, right? Automated General Intelligence. Can't wait to talk to you about that. But I want to start with having our audience learn more about who you are, right? I feel like so many companies are looking to diversify their workforce, especially in the technology industry, financial services technology industry. So why don't we start there? How do you identify, and can you tell us a bit more about how you ended up in tech and a bit more about your career journey?
Absolutely. Well, I do identify, you touched on so many awesome points already. So I identify as a woman of color. I'm Afro-Latina. My parents were immigrants and they came to the United States from the Dominican Republic. So I speak Spanish and English. I'm also dyslexic. And something that I share quite a bit where people are often now hearing more about neurodiversity. People may be on the autism spectrum, ADHD, even thinking of different neurotypes, like someone might be listening and they are introvert or extroverted or ambiverted. Maybe you're also dyslexic like me, you know? And so there's space for all of us to delve into the way that our brain works and really leverage that. And that I'll talk about that in a second. But so yeah, all the things, I think I touched on all these different areas. So that's who I am. And really how I came into the space and where I'm at is when I was growing up, I had, you know, learning disabilities And it was difficult to be able to grasp onto concepts and retain information until I found out, oh, my brain is wired a little different. I'm dyslexic. I approach concepts differently than some people would. And also my mind is very adept to like mathematical concepts, pattern recognition. I love formulas. I love the way you can connect dots together. Like that's just a dyslexic mind now I know. Mm-hmm. And that led me into loving learning and learning also how to equip other people to use technology and to use whatever resources at their disposal to be their best. And it also always has led me to think outside of the box and see things and connections where sometimes some people don't see them. All of that to say, I developed this love through math, through pattern recognition, through learning for things like artificial intelligence, things like algorithms, things like very geeky, you know, things that essentially have led me to where I'm at today, which my journey to where I am today was, it was not traditional at all. And okay. If you ask a lot of people who are like futurists or, by the way, the reason why I am a quote unquote futurist is because I see patterns and I can predict how things are kind of moving. It's nothing, it's not a superpower, but it's definitely something that when you start to lean into the way that you think and your brain works, you probably can even unlock another skill set and maybe a role for you in your career that you may have not seen before. So anyway, long story short, Sharita, that basically I am where I am today. I started in academics. Led me also, I was doing some work, my own business at the time when I was in college, undergraduate school. I had my own business around like career development and training and helping people with tools to be better in their own like career development and learning at work. That eventually led me to, after academics and teaching, and I still teach to this day, as you were hearing, it led me into the future of workspace. So I started doing consulting around artificial intelligence and how do you use it for corporate learning and development. And so I had that practice. I also worked with PricewaterhouseCoopers in their future of work division and some of their initiatives that they had going on. And one day when I was speaking with my own consultancy that I was doing the strategy around AI, someone heard me speaking about artificial intelligence and data analytics. And they were like, what do we have to do to get you to come to work at ADP? And joined. Yeah, it was like that, like one of those things in life. So right place, right time kind of situation. I went to ADP, began a role that never existed there before, which was a principal consultant for the future of work. That led me after, especially after taking a moment and looking at what was happening in the world around George Floyd, around every other instance that was before and after George Floyd, and what was happening during the pandemic around all kinds of disparities in DE&I, especially just take away the word D&I and think about people, the right. disparities economically, socioeconomically, like all the things. And I wanted to make a difference in technology at that time to not only speak about AI and machine learning and analytics and all these things and help organizations in that direction, because I was speaking a lot about it and speaking at conferences and all the things that you mentioned, but I also wanted to create in the technology what I was speaking about. Therefore, I created a business case, and this is for your audience who's listening, a little tip for you real quick. I created a business case for 2 years while I was currently in my role. Of those 2 years, I built this, showed it to the right people in the organization. 2 years later, I became the chief of product inclusion at a company, 70-something-year-old company that never had that role before. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been building from the ground up what that looks like at our organization. And as you said, a lot of people are now speaking about these things, which is awesome. And so, yeah, that's my story.
Wow. There's so much to unpack there. I mean, even as we're talking about skills in the workplace, right? And people want to know what's the hottest skills, or even as you're looking at organizations and as they're preparing for the future of work, what skills are needed. But to hear you talk about your journey and how you took hold of what interest you, right, from a career development and training and helping people, and then you turn that into something. And I'm assuming going to that path and then learning, you had to learn and develop so many different skills moving into that AI space. And so it just happened to be happenstance that, and what was kind of the cadence around that transition, moving out of learning to being specifically I'll say a subject matter expert more in this AI and machine learning space?
Great question, because so the learning component, and I actually did a TED Talk a few years ago on the intersection between me, which is like me having neurodivergence, right? And the struggles that I had learning growing up, and the intersection of that and being able to use technology to address those things and help people where at the level of where they are, right? For me, it was someone with dyslexia. How do you help me to really tap into my skill sets and thrive? And so that's what I wanted to do with everyone. So when I started with learning, I started to notice because of patterns, you know, like you can give someone individualized learning and help that person. Can you replicate and automate that? Can you personalize that through technology? Mm-hmm. And that's where I started to lean in and started seeing in the ecosystem of learning in the corporate workspace, how technology was starting to come up and people were starting to use machine learning and artificial intelligence for learning. And then I was like, but how can we personalize learning more? And that's when I started to help organizations and partner with others who were moving in that space to say, you know what, maybe it's we could use AI to help somebody when they're literally on like looking at a course. Mm-hmm. If you went back on the video that you were trying to learn from several times, you go back, and you keep on going back to the same point. The computer, right, should be able to recognize that you keep going back to the same location. You may need help at whatever inflection point that is. So then you should be able to bring up like a chat bot or some pop-up on your screen that's initiated by machine learning to say, hey, Giselle, we noticed that you keep on going back to this section in the learning. Here's extra learning that can help you. And here's click here if you want to learn more. Kind of like Netflix with the recommendations, right, that it gives us when we're looking and, you know, this is we, people like you, watch this. So that's what I started to get into. From that, it opened up so many other areas from basically being able to use technology to help people wherever they are, because you could use AI in so many other approaches. That's not just learning. You could do it for, you know, recruiting. You could do it for screening people. You can be, you could do it for fraud detection, security preventions, and you could do all kinds of things. So that.
No, I love that. And so let's lean into that a little bit more, because I think starting with your own personal focus, but now expanding to beyond that to people in your full ecosystem, you've been focused on building inclusive and responsible and ethical technologies, right? And so I guess my thought is, as you've been doing this work and creating this business case and now become this chief of product innovation, to me, before we see behavioral changes in people, it has to start with the mindset. So what are the ways that you've seen certain companies ensure that their culture and the mindset of their people are ready to start building these more inclusive products?
Yeah, the hardest part of this work is not keeping up with the technology. It's not learning the new tools, because in fact, today, you don't even have to be a data scientist to particularly have an impact in certain technology fields. Like before, everyone was recruiting for that. Everyone was trying to go learn to be a data scientist. Mm-hmm. Today, a lot of products have data baked in and analytics baked in. So all you need to know is how to interpret those data insights and know how to speak to them. You don't have to be the person behind the scenes working it out. Mm-hmm. So the tech is there, and yes, we should learn about it. And I have gotten certified and learned to your point that you made. Yes, I've done a lot of learning along the way, learn large language models, natural language processing, natural language understanding, like all of that stuff. Yes. Mm-hmm. However, to know enough to be dangerous. However, the hardest part is change management and behavioral change. Because if you start looking in the news and you look at politics and you look at policies, the way that people speak about diversity, equity, and inclusion has become less about humans and more about politics. And unfortunately, it's become more like that to where we're losing sight of what were we really talking about? We're talking about giving people the chance to use technology regardless of if you have a disability, if you're left-handed, if you, whatever your gender identity is, you know, to be able to pick somebody up on a facial scan, because even if their skin tone is darker, if they're more melanated, if, you know, to be able to understand that someone wearing a headdress or any kind of religious garb that they might have on or anything, you could still pick that person up through facial recognition technology and AI. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that you're like, oh, wait, we should design for all people.
And you would think that's basic, but it's not.
You would think,
but
however.
Why, but because, is it because of the, we're missing the voices of everyone? There's not enough representation.
Yes, I believe
in the data
so.
Sets for one, but also in the people that are creating the products, because they're not even thinking about it.
There you go. So yes, absolutely. You're right. We need people who are there, who are thinking about these things and saying, hey, what about this group? What about this lens? Have you thought about this? So we do need that for sure. But we also need to speak about it differently, because when you talk to people about DE&I, they already have a pre-assumption and a prejudice, actually, sometimes in their mind, an assumption that could be even harmful about what you're talking about. You're talking about politics? Are you talking about? No, we're talking about giving everyone consideration. And so it's also about, if someone's listening to this and you want to get into this work and you want to make these changes, it's not about going into the meeting and, you know, being an activist. It's not that. It's actually opening the eyes and bringing awareness to people so that they could see from a different perspective and tell people, hey, you know that we're missing a whole subset of people that we could reach out to with this product or service. In fact, we're missing in revenue. You're leaving on the table the market potential of X amount of millions of dollars because we're not considering this certain demographic of people in how we're designing. So it's that, you know?
Yeah. And especially as, what are they saying in the US? The majority minority by 2045, the demographics of the world is changing, right? And so those are definitely, I think even me on my journey, right? Leading DE&I, the talk track around it, making sure that able to speak about the impacts from a moral, but also a business perspective, right? Is definitely key, because people just receive things differently, right? Just even based on their roles, based on their own lived experiences. But can you share maybe some of the types of initiatives you've spearheaded? Have you maybe had any products or changes in the financial services or fintech spaces?
Yeah, one of the things that comes to mind is specifically in that space is working on like a financial inclusion tool, right? And thinking about the different ways and who are we reaching out to that tool with. So you'll hear a lot of organizations try to say financial wellness. And among that, you think of tools such as like being able to access your pay early or being able to have a pay card or a digital form of pay. When we think about these things, if you can give financial wellness to all people, yes. But when you start saying financial inclusion, you're acknowledging that certain groups of people and demographics approach a topic like financial wellness a little differently. If you think about everyone can get paid, yes, but can everybody keep their some of their pay? Or are some people having to go and get a pay advance somewhere and incur fees because they are unbanked or underbanked? There was a study, I believe it was by the Harvard Business Review some years ago, and they were delving into how Black people who are Black, right, Black people are incurring more financial fees in their life because of being unbanked or underbanked in some instances, to where they're having to go get like, just go through more processes to get access to their money. And so sometimes then they're not able to keep certain amounts of that money and then grow that money and save that money and invest that money. It's like this whole cycle that's actually based on some systemic issues that already exist in the financial, you know, space for certain groups of people. So when you think about that, you know, and you design, you could say, okay, let's, what can we do in our product to make for more inclusive design? Yes, let's make for marketing and approaches and messaging that, you know, reaches certain groups of people. Let's make sure that the way that we're talking about, even on another thing that we're working through, is how can we make some of those cards even more accessible so that someone can distinguish their card if you're blind or low vision. All these different things that come into the play are some areas. But outside of that, financial services is really thinking about how people identify. And I'm sure you've probably even heard some financial services organizations are doing things like you can put your preferred or chosen name on your card on the outside if there's a card attached to to your financial services institution versus having to only use your legal name, because there are people who are transgender or may even have a name pronunciation that they chose to go with some other name to identify with outside of gender and sexual orientation.
Right.
Those are things that people are doing to be more inclusive.
Yeah,
you know,
more
all
inclusive.
Of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And those are very small things that will really, I think, attribute more to customer loyalty, right? They will feel more connected when they feel like they can be their full selves, even by using the name that they want to use. So that's definitely something interesting. Finestra is very focused, and we believe, you know, finance is open. And so we've definitely been exploring internally different ways that we can make our products more inclusive. And there's actually a project that I'm working on right now, trying to modernize technologies of CDFIs and MDIs to get more access to capital in those underserved communities.
I love that. And I will propose to you as well on that thought is thinking about the communities. Sometimes we overlook subsets of communities. Like we might think of, yes, let's reach, you know, Black people and Latinx people, and let's reach all these. But if you even think about like religion that often and value systems that often get overlooked, there are Muslims that there are so many Muslims, especially in the United States. There are big populations of Muslims. There are populations outside of the United States in other places as well. Recently, Uber had a situation in the UK where they found that about, I believe it was like close to 75% to 90% of their drivers were Muslim, identifying as Muslim people. Yet when they went to go, for example, to work with pension or be able to, you know, tap into retirement, the solution that Uber provided them was not in alignment with what they observed called Sharia law. Sharia law means you can't put your funds attached to anything that's associated to alcohol, gambling, tobacco, any of those things, because it's not in alignment with their faith or their value system. So almost overnight, in about a week time span, Uber, because they were facing the litigation, they had to change that and make that service available to their employees. And so even thinking about investment opportunities, is it inclusive of all people? Are we communicating options to other people to, you know, dig deeper, right? Is what I would say that I try to do, and I'm trying to encourage everyone else to always like, yes, there's these groups that we look at, but dig even deeper into those groups and find out.
You know, that's very interesting, because I feel like we're fighting the good fight, right? I feel like organizations understand now that they have to go beyond the surface and really try to understand more about who the individual person is, right? What do they actually need to thrive in the space? And so we may run these campaigns, right? We want you to self-identify and tell us your gender, tell us your race and ethnicity, your sexual orientation, your disability. But a lot of times people aren't comfortable with sharing that information. There's still a lot of, I'll say, fear around how a company is going to use the data, or even GDPR and you know, legal restrictions around how we collect that type of demographic data and how we're sharing it, how we're using it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I have the thoughts. So one approach would be depend on research, right? And insights that come that don't necessarily have to be that you ask a self-identified question and then you use that data to inform your decisions. Maybe other things can inform your decisions, such as research studies, outside consultory groups, like where do you get the facts to help make the right decisions of where you should invest in innovation and where you should kind of make new processes and things like that. Call on your clients, call on people, and have forums and advisory groups of people who are willing to share information and weigh in on, hey, I think this would be impactful and this would be, you know, great. For example, the examples that I gave you about accessible cards or cards that have people's names on them, or all of that was based out of sometimes surveys and sometimes research studies. So it doesn't necessarily have to come from, hey, employee, tell me this information, or employee or client, tell me this information about yourself, and then I'll do something about it. So that's one thing. The other thing is read the room. So look at the trends, look at what's happening out there, and look at your competition, because they might be already doing things that you haven't quite done yet. And you don't have to ask for these questions. You can just say, you know what, others are doing this, we could do the same as a best practice. One more thing. When insights or when data is being gathered, be very specific about how that's being used, and then internally have privacy teams and legal teams work together with your product teams to specify who has access to that information, who doesn't ever see it, who will see it, and make sure that it gets used in an appropriate way. So sometimes you can use that data, but you have to be very explicit, you know, get consent from the person who's sharing that, and then be very explicit on how it is exactly going to be used.
Okay. So let's, I guess, talk more about this future of work, but I also want to talk about Nifty. So earlier this month at Finastra, we celebrated International Persons with Disability Day. And we spoke about how 1 in 6 people have a significant disability, right? And so that's 1.3 billion people, 16% of the world population. So that led me to just thinking about Nifty and wanting to understand more about what was the genesis of you starting Nifty Collect.
Yeah, the genesis was back to me, right? I guess it's like, I love, like, you know, I told you that I created like that business case for my role around the time of George Floyd and all that was happening. Why that's significant is because during that time, I needed personally to redirect my energy. I needed to redirect the angst that I was feeling, the anger, the indignation, the sorrow, the grief. Like, so many things were happening at that time that I needed to focus on something positive and something where I can like connect back to myself. And part of that was not only, you know, saying, hey, I need to do something different in my career, a new role that's going to be impactful, but also I need to get back to my creative side, my love for learning, my love for, like, when I was a kid, I used to, you know, draw a lot and design, and I messed around, you know, with all kinds of things. I've always loved like 3D concepts and all of that. So I said, what can I do to marry those things? And then I started designing one day these characters that are voxelated 3D design. It just has happened at the kismet right time that at the same time the metaverse was expanding, like Web3, extended reality, you know, games like Roblox, Minecraft, The Sandbox. We're all using avatars. And, you know, one funny one that I love to say is Snoop Dogg created this whole world in Sandbox, the metaverse game. You could be Snoop Dogg if you want to. You could have an avatar that looks like Snoop Dogg, and you can go to his mansion and connect with people. And I wanted to create an avatar like that, but with people with disabilities. So I designed these 3D characters inspired by real people with disabilities. I made one starting with myself. I have dyslexia, and I wanted to present people with unseen disabilities. Because even if it's 1 in 6 that have disabilities, there's so many more people that are either acquiring some kind of disabilities, or we all will, because we get older. We, our eyesight, our hearing, you know, mental health, all kinds of things happen. So, and then you might, you know, have things that you can't see, chronic illnesses and all the things. So we created these avatars like that. Basically, long story short, today they are avatars that we've created a library of them of based on real people, actors, models, designers, like real people with disabilities that are amazing. And we have made games out of them. We've made augmented reality experiences that you could, you know, play with them, filters that eventually get into like IG, Instagram and Snap and all of that. So we're working towards all of this. And that's that project of Nifty Collective.
I mean, we've talked a little bit about the disability aspect, being a woman, person of color. I can tell you, I guess this had to have been around COVID time. I just knew the metaverse was like taking over. Like, I just knew. I went to Costco and I got the Oculus, and I told my husband, I need to start researching this because this is about to be like the future of work. And I feel like the story behind metaverse and WebMD has taking a back seat now that Gen AI has come to the table. What do you see as the intersectionality? Do you feel like it's still happening and traction is still happening in the metaverse Web3 space?
It's happening in waves.
And then I guess to really, how are we cultivating this digital belonging, right? And leading with inclusion as we're thinking about all of these new spaces?
Let me start with that last question. Because Nifty Collective was that. It is that. It's like, hold up. Technology is taking off. The metaverse, by the way, even when we started, was projecting to be in the billions of dollars worth of market potential. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to that in a quick second. But I said, this is all happening. It's happening quickly. And it's leaving out people with disabilities. It mm-hmm. is not accessible mm-hmm. and it's not representative. Like all these avatars exist, but where are the ones with someone who literally, like our characters, some people literally don't have arms or legs, mm-hmm. or they're in a wheelchair, or they're mm-hmm. using a blind cane, a blind stick, a guide stick, you
right.
know,
right.
all of that. So we want it to be intentional. And it's not just us. There's other people that are leaning into either that Web3 space or metaverse or, you know, extended reality experiences. And they're trying to design with more accessibility and all these things. And maybe there's even projects that are around, like there's one called Women, I think it's Women of the World, where it features women as NFTs mm-hmm. and they are in this space of Web3 and they're monetizing on that. I love it. There's others that are LGBTQ+ focused. There's others who are Black focused. There's all kinds of things exist out here. And I love seeing that. So that's to answer some of that question. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is it happens in waves. So you know how AI came out and everybody was like, oh, AI. And then now the wave kind of like subdued it a little bit and people were like, yeah, AI, you know, we expect it in Uber, our app, or we expect it in to tell us the weather. We expect it to tell us traffic patterns.
Right.
We expect it
right.
to tell us, you know, what we're supposed to watch next on Netflix, expecting. And it became very normal. Yeah, AI, right. sure. Amazon Go stores. Mm-hmm. You don't have to use, you know, you don't have to interact with someone because it's using computer vision and AI to like scan for you and you're out, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Self-checkout, all that stuff. But then there was like a lull and then all of a sudden Gen AI. And that's what's happening with the metaverse. There was this huge like expansion and huge thing about the metaverse.
Right.
It was quiet. And also like NFTs, that was like a big boom. People were buying
right.
like pictures
right.
of cats.
Right,
for like millions
right.
of dollars. I don't know. But anyway, so they were doing all of that. Then it like died down and now there's a resurgence again. It's
okay.
happens like that. And what we're seeing is that more brands are moving into these areas. There was a surge during the pandemic with metaverse because you couldn't interact with your customers in person mm-hmm. and because of restrictions and just health and safety reasons. Mm-hmm. So what do you do if you're Nike? What if you do if you're Accenture and you're trying to onboard employees mm-hmm. and, you know, you can't get them to come in the office, you create a virtual metaverse onboarding experience that they still have today. And what if you're the embassy of the Bahamas and you want to, you can't take people in to show them certain things in person. You still want to provide that service. You create an embassy in the metaverse like they did.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're Subway restaurants, you create a cool way for people to still engage with you and go in the metaverse and create their sandwiches on the line, but it's with an avatar. And so these are real things that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
More of that is expanding. And what you're starting to see now is that other pieces of technology are embedding into this to make the next wave. So we're starting to see more AI, generative AI and AI influencing the metaverse space. We're starting to see more like automation and more cool tools and more like ability to do things merging into these spaces. So they're taking a second life. It's
mm-hmm.
coming back. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I love that. And I will say that the resilience of humans to really absorb and adapt to technology or even situations like COVID, right? It's impressive. We are impressive. And I do believe that we'll make it through whatever this
that.
Technology adaption is.
If you didn't get anything from this call, take that away. We are impressive. That was like, that is the
thing.
Humans
are impressive. We are.
Humans are impressive.
So closing question, even as I'll say lots of organizations, we're focused on bringing more women into the workplace, more diversity. What advice would you give your younger self?
Here it is. So here's the advice. I would say that we need to be more ourselves.
Mm.
And I said this and I, you know, you see what just happened? Like right there is something beautiful that kids don't care about how they show up. They don't care. How am I going to be seen? This might be embarrassing. Can we get back to that, please? And I would have told that to myself because in all honesty, and this is so, you know, very personal to me because I'm getting back to this. And I was talking to my family about this recently. That's how personal it is. And I'm very a private person. So to share this means a lot. So I want to get back to me. I want to get back to the me that didn't have to ask a corporate space, for example, how much of me do you want me to bring into this meeting? How much of me am I allowed to bring into this space? All of that must go. I need to show up as my authentic and genuine self, because the life that we are all amazing humans living in this life, it is not stopping to wait for us. It continues moving forward. So I would say to everyone, tap back in into your original self, your playful, inquisitive, bold, courageous, like don't care to show up on a camera on the meeting, you know, kind of self, because you're just curious and you want to say something, you want to speak up. I don't know. So go back to that and let that inform what you do in technology and what you do in your role and the expansion of whatever you bring to the table. The reason why I've been able to create Nifty Collective, the reason why I've been able to come into this role of product inclusion, it's because I've come back into myself. And what matters to me and how I need to speak up, the things that matter to me and how I want to show up in the world. So that's what I would say to my younger self. Giselle, don't ever forget who you are. That's it.
Oh, I love it. Well, we will close there. There you have it, everyone. Lean into who you are, into that untapped potential. Lean into your power and let's continue to move forward in this together. Thank you, Giselle.
Thanks, Arita. You're the best. Take care.
Have a good one.